it's time for a bonus. A bonus episode. I love episodes of theater. We're going off the beaten path.
Off the beaten path.
We're off.
Hello.
Well, hello, everybody.
We are on the eve of Valentine's Day recording today, everybody.
We are. Well, we were just talking off mic. that it's February, like now we're all in it, like the year is going, the holidays are past, no good holidays coming up. Memorial Day is kind of the next big one. I mean, Easter, if you practice, if that's
we
your...
got president. I mean, we've got a Monday off coming up. In
the week. I don't. My next one's not till Memorial Day, but I got Martin Luther King Day off. So
okay,
so
that's good.
Yeah, yes. I'll take that over President's Day.
Apparently today is a holiday. Like there's schools that are closed today and I'm confused because I can't find any. I don't know.
Is it a state holiday? Some sort of weird California bear holiday?
I am unfamiliar. I always get the federal holidays and the religious holidays on my Apple calendar, but nothing's popping up. That's interesting.
Yeah, why? Sometimes they have like, you know, teacher conference day and the
school. Oh, I remember teacher conference days. We always looked really forward to those when I was a kid. Well, hey everybody. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett. Now normally Bailey would be here with us, but today, well, Bailey gotta go take care of a baby. That's what
he's got, like a baby or something.
He's got a new baby, so we don't have. But today we have for you a special artist spotlight, a bonus series highlighting the artists that you should be keeping an eye on and out for, and one of our excellent nominees for the first ever Theater Playwright Award at the 2022 Hollywood Fringe Festival. I'm not doing great today, folks. Almanya Narula. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Hello.
Yay, I'm
hello.
Good.
Welcome.
Almanya is an award-winning international actor, writer, and fight choreographer. She started her career in the entertainment industry at a young age where she was a child actor in various Bollywood films. You need to name some because we need to go. Now we got to go find them. previously, she was involved with the Chicago theater industry, collaborating as an actor and fight choreographer for several acclaimed and award-winning productions. In 2019, this is awesome, she became the first woman of color to be nominated for a Joseph Jefferson Award in fight choreography. A Jeff!
Bad
so congratulations.
Ass.
So
hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is great. Yeah. I didn't realize how much of a mouthful that is. Sorry.
No.
We want to know your accolades. Yeah. We want everyone to know the amazing person that we're interviewing today.
Absolutely.
You must be one of the busiest women in the world, I feel like.
There are bouts where I descend into insanity. And then there's, you know, I mean, like, there's like ebbs and flows. And then it's like, oh, I really do not know when I'm going to accomplish everything. Like, I had this woman who once told me, like, we were having this, like, meeting lunch thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to apply for this some program. I'm writing a screenplay. And, you know, she's like, what are you up to? Like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I have a solo show. And, you know, I'm writing the script. And, you know, I was, like, telling her all these things. I was, like, super excited to share, like, all these projects I'm working on. She's like, wow, that sounds really great. And, you know, she's European, so she was, like, kind of forward in this way. So mm-hmm. like, that sounds great. You know, you're young, you've got energy and stuff like that. But I just want to ask you a question. Amongst all of the things that you're doing, when do you plan to take a shower and or make love to whoever you see? And I'm like, bet. I did factor that into my schedule, but
you have to. I mean, so many of us, especially that are juggling jobs and trying to deal with the industry and trying to make art on top yes. of it, which is oftentimes, too oftentimes, separate from the industry. Like,
yes.
Like, I literally sit down now and schedule evenings off. Like, this is my evening off. This is my mental health day and moment, because if I don't schedule it, I won't get it. But that means I say mm-hmm. no to things, and that's okay.
This busy life is one of the reasons why I won't cancel my gym subscription, because I mostly work out at home, but you never know when I'm going to have a back-to-back day and I'm in a random part of LA and I need to shower somewhere. So I keep my LA Fitness membership.
That's
just
a great
so I don't
idea. That's brilliant.
At the end of the day.
That's brilliant. That's actually pretty brilliant. Yeah.
Been there.
Well, we are connoisseurs of context on this podcast. So, Almanya, please give us a little background on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised in, I was born in Thailand mm-hmm. and then raised between Mumbai in India and Bangkok in Thailand. And, you know, I'm Indian. My parents are Sikh. I guess my great-great-grandfather was sort of refugees in Thailand during partition.
Sure.
Or like prior, sort of like around that sort of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, so like a lot of people in Thailand that I knew, like we all kind of know each other because it was like the same village that came over. My mom, she was born in Thailand, but she was raised fully in India. So that's why like I split my time between those two places.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in India, I sort of stumbled my way onto like a production set. Like I was one of those kids that would talk to everyone.
Right.
This is what I was told, was that I somehow found my way on a producer's lap. It's not a habit that I took on with me in my adulthood, thank God.
Right.
But you know, he was like, oh, here's a kid, and I guess they were like casting for some chocolate commercial, and you know, my mom was like, I'm so sorry, and he's like, I don't know, she's really cute, you should bring her real quick for extras and stuff like that tomorrow. And you know, my mom was very enthusiastic, so like she was kind of living the single mom life, and she wanted to like let me live life to the fullest in terms mm-hmm. of extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
So I'm there, and that's like my first memory is just like running across the beach, you know. And I don't really know how this transition happened, but one thing led to another, and I got like an agent for kids or whatever. And I started booking these commercials because I was just like a very loud personality. And I landed a pivotal role in a commercial playing like, imagine if, who could I compare this to? It was like, imagine if LeBron, right, had a like commercial about Pepsi.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing LeBron's kid.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
And I beat him in basketball. And his face is on like Pepsi.
That's wow. Awesome.
Like, yeah. So I guess an energy drink would be a better comparison. Mm-hmm. So like India is sort of like that level athlete, but he played cricket. He won the World Cup in 84. I played his like daughter in a commercial, and that commercial sort of like took off, and I beat him in a game of cricket. It was all very good and stuff. And yeah, I mean, like one thing led to another, and I was, you know, doing things left and right. I, you know, I had music videos, and before I could actually hit like my peak, you know, like really get out there, because I was booking heavy stuff, my mom pulled me out of this a movie, this like really big movie that I was going to be in, because the scheduling changed and it was coming in the way of my education. And she valued education, you know, like she, we didn't grow up rich or anything. And so she was like, I want her to have a shot at life. And, you know, like, I guess my mom and dad were getting back together. So we went back to Thailand, but like the acting thing still stuck with me. And I couldn't really do that in Thailand because I was a ship out of water. I didn't know the language, you know, I was Indian there. I was in Thai there. And so I gravitated towards pop culture and American pop culture. And I kept seeing, like, that's when I, you know, learn about Star Wars and all these things, and I kept, you know,
we're big Star Wars lovers on this show.
Yes.
Oh, great. But yeah, I mean, you know, not to get us sort of off topic, just one thing led to another, and I always sort of saw myself being in this world. And just somehow I was, you know, by happenstance, I got into college. There was a heavy stage combat program, you know, which satisfied my childhood, you know, Star Wars, pirates, nerdy stuff. And
Yeah, hell yeah.
yeah, that's how I came here. And here we
Well,
are.
this kind of segues perfectly into the next question we had, which was, how did you come to theater and writing? So you kind of came in through the fighting choreography vein, or tell
I was
us.
always an actor, and I kept, like, even as a kid, like, I was a journalism intern, and journalism was something that kept coming back to me, like writing stories, like telling stories about things that people wouldn't normally talk about. And so I actually have a master's in journalism, because
Awesome.
I
Right
thought, like,
on.
that's what I was going to do. But then when it was time for my thesis, I didn't really want to do anything they were telling me to. Like, I didn't want to write like a 10,000-word dissertation,
Sure.
you know. And so
Yep.
I was looking at alternative methods, and not that I was like poo-pooing on that like style. I just didn't
Right.
think it was for me and
Right.
what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I, again, you know, like gravitating towards stories of like the hero's journey and epics and things like that.
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's like a big influence for me. I was, you know, involved in the fight community at the time, and also by extension, the intimacy community. And Me Too movement just happened. That's what actually made me go to journalism school. And I, you know, decided to track the origin story of how intimacy, direction, and coordination was codified and what became a pedagogy. And you know, my teacher at the time was like showing me alternative forms of journalism. I was following this comic book journalist called Joe Sacco at the time, and my teacher showed me this book called Hip Hop: A Family Tree, which is basically the history of hip hop told as a comic book. And I was like, whoa, you can do that?
That's
And
cool.
so
Yeah.
I ended up writing like a 99-page comic book. I collaborated with an artist, and I sort of turned it into like a superhero story. So there was a suspension of disbelief and stuff like that. But I wrote the dialogues, and I wrote like the you know, the interactions that were based on true events, but obviously like modified to, you know, make it a little more like linear. And I turned it in, and you know, like I was accepted, and you know, it was really great. And all my teacher was like, I think you want to be a writer. And I was like, yeah, I mean journalism. They're like, no, I think you want to write like sort of fiction style things, you know. And I was like, yes, but I think my journalism background really informs that, because I, you know, even the solo show, like, it that's a true story, you know, and it is a lot of research that is involved. So yeah, that's kind of how I pivoted in that way.
Right
Cool.
on,
right on. What was the first play you ever did? What was the first play you ever acted in?
Oh my God. I mean, there's like, let me see, like the first memory I have of a play, because all my memories as a kid was like being on set, but the first play that I was in, it was like some things that, like, you know, original material that my school wrote. Like, this was elementary and middle school, like, teachers wrote and stuff like that. But the first, like, transition of like, oh, this is theater. I did Romeo and Juliet
All
my
right.
freshman year.
That's a good in.
But we sort of like it still wasn't theater like in the way that like traditionally, like, you have your rehearsals and tech and all of that. Like, it was it's oh, Guys and Dolls.
All right, all right, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
We haven't covered Guys and Dolls yet on the podcast, but we keep threatening that sometime it is going to happen and we are going to cover Guys and
It
Dolls.
was the weirdest experience, because I don't sing, and you know, it was just like super. I remember it being like one of those things where it was the worst decision that this teacher that I respect told me so much about theater. But he just made an executive decision to do Guys and Dolls when we didn't have the budget for it. And it just was like, oh, like it was spectacular. But then my senior year show had to be a very like, and that was actually a very good show because we relied so much on our acting, and like minimalistic things. But it was like, my junior year was like Guys and Dolls.
Yes.
And then like, you probably don't even know about this play. It's called Nuts by Fausto Paravedino. It was like, it's like an obscure play that's sort of based on Peanuts.
Oh,
but
okay,
like,
okay.
It's not like Dog Sees God. It's like, it's like even more messed up. Okay. And like, it becomes like a totalitarian world. And I play Lucy, who's like now like torturing everyone, like the Lucy character. And yeah. And that was like a crazy, like violent thing, you know. But yeah, Guys and Dolls was like my first experience as like a full sort of theatrical piece. I mean, I did ballet when I was younger, you know, like Cinderella, Nutcracker, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And where was this that you did Guys and Dolls?
Thailand.
Oh, Thailand. Cool. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Yeah, it was really funny because it was like I teacher tried so hard. I mean, he's British, but like he tried to get a like Thai students who like can't do like a New York accent, like, and like I was really bummed because I really wanted to play Adelaide, and I was totally right for the part, but I can't sing. So it was like he was just like, "I'm sorry, like you." You're not gonna be able to get through it. Yeah. So yeah, that was a very weird experience. Fun, weird experience. Teacher I still talk to and hold very dear to me. Cool. Like actually, yeah, supported me in my solo show a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm gonna don't mind me, I'm just like walking because I don't know what's going on with my battery situation today. I'm just plugging it in.
You're all good.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing that you've written or performed in?
Favorite thing that I've written and performed in, I mean, like the show. Right, the solo show is like, I feel like the first time I wrote something that came from, I don't know, that came from the heart. Uh-huh. And that I got to see it's like, it got to see it in fruition. So I would say like, this show is probably my favorite thing that I've written. I'm writing a bunch of screenplays that like I really like. I haven't had the luxury of actually performing it yet or having any, you know, sure, readings of it yet. But sure. I would say like this solo show is probably the favorite thing that I've written because it's something that I in theory have been working on since I was 10. You know?
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, it's something that I hold really dear to me and something that it's like almost like in a way manifested at such a young age because it you know, the footprint that she left on me,
mm-hmm.
Noor and Icon, was like, I tell myself I'm going to play her one day, you know?
That's fucking awesome.
And so instead of waiting for someone else to like cast me as her, I just kind of like,
did it.
Yeah.
You did
Hell
it.
Oh yeah. Well, and I mean, we're here. This was the next thing we were going to move into. Let's talk about Noor and I at Con. I liked it for so many reasons. Like I saw a lot of one person shows at Fringe this last summer. And some of them better than others, all that stuff. But this was one, and one of the reasons why I hyper appreciated it for a lot of different reasons. But one of them was, it was a one-person show telling a story about someone I've never heard of before, as opposed to like this one-person show about me as an individual going through this big life event and figuring it out, which there's nothing wrong with shows like that. But that's what made this piece. I mean, it stood out to me for a lot of different reasons, but it specifically stood out to me because I was learning about a new historical person. It was new to me that I'd never known anything about her before. And I really appreciated that about this piece.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that drew me to it is that it was so driven. You know, it's so easy for a one-person show to become didactic and, you know, yes. talking. And this yes. wasn't. This, you launched that show. Like, it launches in a visceral way. And so you're as an audience member, immediately snapped into it. An extraordinary story about a woman that, like, just people should know about. Like, what an extraordinary life. And at a time when, you know, all of the cultural misogynistic stuff going on at the time. And here's this woman putting herself on the line for the sake of civilization, her country,
when she didn't
freedom.
Even have to, like.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, like, I mean, just tell us a little bit about, like, I mean, obviously you've been with this character and this story for a long time. Just tell us how you came to her and the story and all that good stuff.
So, this started as part of coursework in my school. I went to the Art of Acting Studio. It's in Los Angeles, which is part of Stella Adler, that's mm-hmm. in New York.
Yeah.
And we were assigned just coursework to go home and come up with three people that we could write a 10 to 15 minute solo piece on.
Cool.
And I mean, she was in my head, you know, since I told you I was like 10. Mm-hmm. But there's still not like a lot of information about her and stuff like that. But we had the summer to like sort of think it over. And so I put her down as like, just, you know, curiosity. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this here. I don't know if I'm ready. And then I put down Kalpana Chawla, who died in the explosion. She was like the first Indian to be sent out with NASA, who was one of the Apollo missions that crashed.
Yeah.
And then Milkha Singh, who was he's known as the Flying Sikh. He was a runner, Olympian runner, that made waves. You know, he lived through partition and stuff. He made waves for like Indian people. But when my teacher was like talking to me, she was like, it seems like for some reason, even though there isn't a wealth of information about this person, your eyes just sort of lit up when you were talking about her, and you seem to have a lot of information about her. And I was like, I guess no. And he's like, well, I think this is the one. I think you need to do it. I'm like, okay. And so I come in. And initially I'm like, you know, because she's a spy. And I thought I was going to like find out some like James Bond, like badass stuff. You know, like I come from like a combat background. So I was like, ooh, I'm going to get to do like some like fun, like, I don't know, badass stuff. And I started digging into her. And I was like kind of annoyed because one, there was like not a lot of information. So I didn't know where to pull the story from.
Sure.
And right. then two, it was like, she just like, she was so like, you know, the thing that they talked about, it was like, she's just like this airhead and like, you know, she was such a contradiction of herself and like, all of these things that I just was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I don't know where the story is. It's like, this is too much. She's kind of weird. Like, she has these principles and philosophies and she went against them and things like that. And, you know, I go into class. My teacher's like, okay, I mean, I respect if you don't want to do this person, but give it to like Violet. And if you can't come back with three things that you can thoroughly talk about in this person, you can change it, but just give it a shot, right? So I go home and I know the three things and I come back and then I end up talking about these three things for the entire class and I don't even realize that I'm doing it. And he was like, you've taken up the entire class period. You don't want
to
do
this. Something.
Right, so I was like, okay, fine, I guess I'll do it. And you know, it still wasn't clicking because it was like, I know this information. This is just facts. These are just facts about a person.
Sure.
You know, and then all of the documentaries are contradicting each other and they're just boring. And you know, and then it's something hit me. I was like not able to find it. I was not able to find it. And then like in the middle of the night, I had a dream, and this is not to be like she spoke to me through like my dreams. It's just I was like absorbing her so much that like sometimes I just, you know, like when you dream about characters in your lines or like, you know. And I just woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, oh my god, there was that moment that she didn't sign this document, and that happened, and oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And I was like, oh shit, this is the moment that like defines everything that she is and justifies everything that she is. And she kind of ended up reminding me of my mother, who like is a very tiny woman, you know, sort of built to be the oldest daughter in the family, to take care of everyone, you know, the good Indian wife. She wasn't able to go out, you know, like she grew up in the 60s in India. No, she was born in the 60s. She grew up in like the 70s in India. Like, she wasn't able to stand in the balcony because she had a strict dad and she didn't want, you know, people to see her like that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mom's not had the best marriage. A lot of, you know, this pressure from husband, pressure from her mother-in-law, all of that. And there was this one day, right? And she's always fought like inner strength. Like she's always fought for me. Like whenever it came to me and my education and things like that, she always fought for me. But there was this one day that like we were at a mall, and it was like a black market mall in Thailand. I don't know. We were buying like bootleg DVDs or whatever. And this woman like says something to my mom in Thai, and you know, like the relationships between Thai and Indian people sometimes aren't the best. And my mom was like, what did you say? And I think she insulted my mom's dad or something like that. And my mom was trying to diffuse it and ignore it, you know. And it just kept on happening. And at some point it escalated to a level where this lady, the merchant, like leaped on top of my mom. And mind you, I was like 13 at the 12, 13, you know, she leaped on top of my mom, and my mom, something like switched, and she just ended herself. And next thing I know, everyone's like surrounding us and just watching these two women like go at it. And you know, I was really embarrassed at the time. And then I thought about it. I was like, this is when The Lion came out. And this is what she's always been, you know. It's not that this moment changes. She's always been this, and she's not allowed to be it. And similarly, I was like, oh, that's the story. Is newer has always been this thing. And the reason why there's information that contradicts is because no one else has been able to figure out what happened and why she went against even her own philosophies and her own thing, and why she joined the war and all of that. Because it's like, to me, her story is someone who wanted to get away from her overbearing Indian family and be a part of something cool, be a part of like having an identity outside of, you know, her royal family.
Yeah.
Right.
And like stumbling into greatness, you know. And when push came to shove, she went against everything that she was taught. Like she lied, she fought, she did all of these things.
Because that was she when she was killed?
27. So about my age. Yeah.
So
Wow. So my next question for you, Amanya, how long did it take after that initial classroom sort of epiphany that you could do this show? How long did you work on it before you put it up for the first time? And was Fringe the first time you had it up?
So, as part of the coursework, we performed it, you know, in front of people and things like that. And that was in March of 2022. I struggle with ADD. So in terms of, you know, it's funny because my mentor for this was like Kristen Durso. He was our teacher, and he's a screenwriter and he's a playwright and things like that. And he also talk to me about his process and things like that. And in his class, which was the first semester, so fall semester, I didn't do a single assignment because I was like, I can't do it. I don't, because I didn't have my story. This is what I was like freaking out, you know? And then when we got our like evaluations, you know, how we get our like class evaluations and things like that. The teacher was like, according to his evaluation, like, she is a genius. He actually wrote my recommendation letter for another grad school I applied to. And I was like, wait, what? Because I was like, I didn't do a single assignment.
I didn't follow your instructions.
I talked to him about it. And he was like, no, I know you're going to get it. I know you're going to get it. I can see like your process. You have ADD. You'll figure it out. Even if it's last second, you will figure it out. You know, sure enough, tech was like, maybe like, sometime like it was like 2 days before I performed. I did not have a script. We were supposed to have our finalized script like 3 weeks before, you know, like memorized on tech kind of thing. You know, I did not have a script until like the last meeting with my advisor. And even then I was like, I don't know. It's like, we're still figuring out. And then tech happened and I was not on book. I was like, I don't, there's something missing. And then we finally like figured it out, you know, and up until performance time, I was self-editing the script over and over. Like I didn't, you know, like anything that involved like sound cues, like I had such limited sound cues and lighting cues anyway, like anything that involved that I didn't change. But like I was self-editing, you know, there were things that like happened in the moment on stage when I performed it, that was not written. That was a little bit improv. That was just sort of like, I was so in the moment that, you know, that I actually kept, you know, and I wrote a lot, actually a lot. I wrote more than I needed to for my coursework. And so I don't, when I do something and when I put my heart and soul into something, I don't want to not continue it outside. You know, like I want to like, if I'm doing something for school and I work really hard on it, I don't want it to end there, you know? And so I was introduced to the Hollywood Fringe Festival because I heard that, you know, I heard about it. Like I, you know, from teachers, from other classmates who were part of it, from just like the community and things like that. And I was like, oh, this is a really interesting way to explore what this could be, because I was like thinking about making it a short film, which I'm still thinking about. And so I was like, you know what? I want to do something for myself. And I want to tell this story and I want people to know about this story. And I, you know, I heard about some other projects that were happening on her, like a movie had come out called A Call to Spy that I watched, which was like, it was a great movie, but it still didn't hit like the thing that I wanted to talk about, you know? And so I was like, listen, I think I want to pivot into writing and acting, of course. Like I want to still maintain the fact that I'm an actor, but I'm really sold on pivoting into writing, and I want to see what my writing can do and whether or not this is something that is something that I should pursue. Will people respond, you know? And I just wanted to share her story. It was like multiple different things that I was battling, and so that's why I pursued the Fringe originally. Like I didn't really, you know, like all of the love and stuff that happened wasn't something that I had really thought about. It wasn't in my periphery. For me, like I've produced other things before, you know, like I ran a magazine in Chicago, like not like I ran like an issue, like I created a sort of zine for theater in Chicago. And, you know, I've done other self-produced stuff, but to this level, I haven't. And so I just wanted to know, like, I was just sheer curiosity. Like, how far I can go before someone like will stop me. You know, that was kind of what, that's what, you know, pushed me. And also, I had all this material that I didn't use for school, because we only had 15 minutes. I mean, they weren't going to shut the lights off on us, you know?
Sure.
My runtime ended up being like 16, 17 minutes, but it was like, you know, like, but like, you couldn't do like a 40 minute show.
Sure.
Because there was like other students. So I had all this material, and there were parts of the story that like I felt that I couldn't accomplish in 15 minutes that I could in like 35.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that was sort of what pushed me towards at least doing the Fringe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and everybody was talking about it. That's Noor Inayat Khan, everybody. And we're going to be giving you information just a little bit later because there is going to be another production of this and everybody needs to get it out and see it.
Yeah.
Scott, I interrupted you.
No, you did not. That's not true. You lied.
Okay. do you have a favorite playwright or theater artist?
I mean, you can't go wrong with the Bard, right? Like, I mean, like, I love Shakespeare. You know, I mean, yeah. That's like so, I mean, that's like kind of an easy answer. I love Shakespeare. And I've had like, I think I've just been blessed with really good Shakespeare teachers. Like,
that's Nikki the trick. Lucas,
yeah. Yes.
Art Mankey. I went back when I was in Chicago, Caroline Latta, Tom Eula, like, who just like really focused on, I mean, obviously the poetry and all that, but the human emotion. And they're always so like different. You know, mm-hmm. So I was able to take whatever worked for me from all of them. And there's this thing, you know, with the Brown community, I've noticed that like a lot of people don't like Shakespeare because there's this like rhetoric that Shakespeare's not for us. Mm. And I think there's so much poetry in Shakespeare. And I think that comes from like traditionally people, you know, who have melanin, have not been like cast in roles that make sense outside of Othello.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, there's something that like Bollywood, right, is very Shakespearean to me.
Yeah.
And in the sense of it is an entertainment form. I was going to get my PhD on this, and what I was going to say was like, it's the only entertainment in India that no matter what caste you are, what class you are, what gender you are, what religion you are, you can be, what income level you are, you can be sitting in the same theater next to each other consuming the same thing and enjoy it. Yeah. And you might not be laughing and clapping at the same things, but right. You are sharing that art form together, right? And so Bollywood, much like Shakespeare, catered to so many different kinds of people in that one space, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I love Shakespeare. And I feel like I love words, you know? And so, but in terms of modern playwrights, like I really like Rajiv Joseph. He has some hits with like Bengal Tiger and Gods of the Taj was really good. Madhuri Shaker is an upcoming playwright that is one to be watched. She did House of Joy.
Yeah.
She did House of Joy at like San Diego Rep, you know, many other places. She also did, did this Amazon show called Evil Eye, which I thought was really good. It was like, you know, sort of based on like, it was a Blumhouse Amazon series, sort of taking in the Evil Eye lore in India and, you know, like the things behind it and kind of making talking about generational trauma with that as well. So I think she's like a really awesome playwright. There's another playwright, and he's like, his name is not coming to mind right now, but he did a play called PYG or The Miseducation of Dorian Bell. Whoever's listening looks that play up. That play is great.
Yeah.
And just as a shout out to Chicago, Ike Holder. It's pretty great. I love so many playwrights. I mean, there's Stephen Adley Gurgis too that I love. That's a bit of a hard question for me because I'm like, I love that playwright, this playwright. Yeah. Oh my God, that, you know, like.
We should get a recommendation list from you.
Yeah, we'll post it.
How about, do you have a favorite play that you really enjoy? Out of all of the plays in the world, which is your favorite?
Bengal Tiger, man. I've done monologues from that play so many times. Like Rajiv Joseph's Bengal Tiger. Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo.
Yeah.
It's just so good. You know, because it's like, I mean, you know, you have this tiger who's dead, who's going through an existential crisis. You know, and it's such a, talking about the state of the world and war and why, you know, things like that, that I just, it's things like I think about so much. And I think it's, you know, I was consuming that a lot, especially with what was going on in Ukraine and all.
Yeah.
I remember I did a monologue from there and I just like started bawling in class and I was like, I don't know why I'm crying. My teacher was like, it's because you give a shit about these things. And I'm like, I know, but you know, so yeah, I think right now what's hitting me is Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo.
Actually, just a couple weeks ago, we had an LA spotlight and it was another theater playwright nominee, Pastiche Queen, a.k.a. Dan Lovato, was directing and had designed Rajiv Joseph's All This Intimacy.
Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
So, small little world, as always in LA.
One more question on this topic, but do you have any dream roles? Is there any role that's out there that you're like, I want to do that?
Okay, so the dream role I wanted, the movie's already happened. The part two of Top Gun. It sucks. But like, honestly, I would take any Mission Impossible movie.
I love it.
I know, like everyone's like, you know, like drama and like things. Like, I would love to play a villain in James Bond, like not like a Bond girl, like I want to play like the villain. In James Bond, you know, I love playing roles like Noor because I feel like I get to showcase and tap into all versions of me.
Sure.
You know, and this, you know, I think for with Noor too, it was such a, I think I needed the role more than the world needed to be told about it. Or at least that's how I feel.
About,
oh, yeah. which is saying a lot because I, you know, it really did bring me to like what, like my feminine side. And so many times I've been cast as like, you know, the badass role, the person who can fight and things like that, that like, I really loved the challenge of being able to exhibit that without articulating physical violence. Like obviously violence is inflicted upon her, but like she is not doing that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if someone calls me tomorrow and tells me I'm gonna be a Bond villain, I think I can retire.
I model my eyebrows off of Bond villains. Since I started getting them shaped, I want Bond villain eyebrows.
They do all have the best eyebrows.
They do. So here is the point where I want to make sure that everyone hears out that on the 25th of February, that's Saturday, there will be another performance of Noor Inayat Khan at the White Fire Solo Fest. I know Brian Rasmussen, who runs that theater. He's a good man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we're going to put all of the information in the bio because we want everyone to get out and see this show and support Almanya. Like, it's great. You will learn something. Like, please go see the show Saturday the 25th at the White Fire in the Valley, actually.
Yeah. And it's a hell of a ride. Like, it's just a great play and it's a great performance. So yeah, go see it. Go see it.
Do you have any other things coming up that you want to plug? Are you going to be a Fringe this summer?
We'll see. There is something that I'm writing, a solo show that I'm writing. Again, another thing that I want to turn into a film on this woman, Helen, who is who's like an item girl in Bollywood. Item girl is like the cameo person who comes in, and she's usually a woman, at least traditionally speaking, the 70s, and she's the one who created this sort of role. Would come in and does like a dance number, like it, and the movie marketing is sort of centered around this number. That's something that I'm working on. I don't know if it'll be ready in time for the Fringe this year, but I'm trying to make my current solo show a short film where I'm trying to involve animation and things like that.
Cool.
So yeah, I mean, other than that, there's like a boxing feature that's in the works. you know, a couple different projects. Nothing's like announced. I might be going back to Chicago to fight direct in April. But all TBD.
Yep. Just waiting. Okay, great. Well, is there anything else we want to say or cover here before we start closing out the show?
Not from my end. Thank you so much, Amanya. It was, it's, you know, I saw it twice at Fringe, and I think it's just marvelous, and I think you're marvelous, and so I'm glad we got to have you here, and for you to hype you.
Yes.
It's pretty fun, so thanks.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a great conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us for our Artist Spotlight bonus episode. Coming up on the pod, we're about to cover Talking Heads' 1984 film, Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
Tune in and hear how this film kind of changed my life. we're doing it with deep friends of the pod, Natalie Nicole Dressel, who is our guest for Paula Vogel, and her partner, Jay Dutcher. They are both incredible and have a lot to say about this film. And then, everybody, I want you to hang on to your butts, because then we're doing a mini series on Andrew Lloyd Webber, which I think is hot trash, but it's going to be a lot fun to talk about. You can follow us on all the socials and follow Amanya. And again, we're going to make sure we get this in the bio so everyone can follow you on both the things, on Instagram at Amanya Narula and at, for the show specifically, NoorInayatKhan.soloshow. Look in the bio for that info, everybody.
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
It's true.
He also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill.
Hello, Carol.
Who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
Y'all, find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You can also email us. And please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe. Subscribe. Every little bit helps. Amanya, thank you.
Yes,
thank you so much.
We loved having you.
Loved being here.
Yay.
Can't wait to have you on next time.
Right on. Later, everybody.
Bye.
The theater, the theater. Hang out, Louie! Theater, theater. To be or not to be.